the ability to insert directly into the cache.
Hey. Sorry to interrupt. Hey. Can I get this back to you?
Yes.
And also, I haven't been able to reach Geary, but this is for Geary, and I thought you might see him this afternoon at that research talk. At 2 o'clock, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure if he'll be there, though.
Oh.
Yeah, well, I can...
Oh, okay. Because I'm leaving at noon.
Okay, do you want to check with him if he's going
to
be there?
I've been trying to reach him. Well, all right. Okay. Let's see. I'll come back then after.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks. But, yeah. So, that one performs more like the same area generally as the previous test with just the insertion short, the direct insertion.
Yeah, well, I think our detection of a stable phase based on that metric is...
Yeah, that's what I'm feeling
is,
for the most part.
...is a little troublesome because that is a very quick change that LORC does, right? And it operates at a much finer granularity.
So
that might be at the root of some of the problems you're facing.
Yeah, so biggest thing, for the most part, has just been the idea of trying to have something decent, and I'll be implementing the miss rate stability soon as
it's like more of a confirmation of phase detection.
As well as there is the question of recency for the things in the cache. Now, the new phase and the QR was supposed... The CR, pardon me. The idea of that, of how I was using it, was to determine whether or not the items in the phase had good locality or not. But... I mean, we could always go the route closer to what multi-queue does and have some values that we can check in or have an end time for items.
Yeah, if you want to go through the multi-queue route, then we should probably use their tunables.
Yeah, and that's the problem.
Yeah, because if we just borrow some bits and pieces of the multi-queue idea, then it's, first of all, it's not clear if we are getting the full benefit of multi-queue idea.
Yeah.
And second, it's also a big question as to how we write about this thing. But are we using multi-queue? Are we not using multi-queue? And then it's a bit of a gray area there with respect to novelty.
So yeah, at this point, a lot of different ways to have some possible inspiration.
Yeah.
So a lot of thinking.
I suspect that the phase detection as we are deriving from LORC may not actually be phase detection. It might be some other behavior that we are detecting.
So,
and therefore, taking steps that are dependent on a new phase may actually be really bad. For instance, bypassing the ghost list, right? Inserting into the cache bypass. I think that we have to do something more than that. And your miss rate stability as a confirmation could potentially help. So, well, anyway, we can talk about this later because I think the agenda for today is something else.
Yeah.
And Jason wanted to talk about what he's been doing and how you can help with that. With your spare cycles.
I think of these, the reason for this, have you got a chance to take a look?
I reviewed a lot of it, yeah.
Oh, you did? Okay. So I'll go over it very quickly. And
I like the idea of the, what was it called? The reuse set.
Reuse set, yeah. Very good. So we can actually go very quickly. I think the implementation, Raju and I sort of talked about this over several times already, and I think the appealing side, what I see, is the possibility to sort of detach this a little bit from the immediate sort of improvement of the caching algorithm. However, it has very tangible benefit, hopefully, that we can do. And all these definitions I give in the write-up, I attach that with very simple implementations of processing the trays to be able to get all those measurements. And the problem is I don't have time to implement. I tried from get to the implementation. That's in the end, I just couldn't really make up the time for really doing that. So I'm hoping that, you know, by the end of the meeting, and see if you see this as something that, you know, spend a little bit time on it and be able to sort of process the data and allow us to take a look at what we think might be very interesting to look at, you know, those plots, and see whether we can actually say detecting faces, for example. There are ways that are detecting faces, and also there are cases that we think that probably by looking, at least I sort of have a guess that, you know, it's probably can help us in terms of determining a better caching algorithm by looking to past and looking to the future, that they correlate very well, and we'll be able to really use that for better cache algorithm, especially, you know, detecting the transitions of those working set and so on and so forth. So this is what I think that we could do. We could actually go through, since you have read it mostly, I would just, you know, I think you got most of the ideas until we got to the conditions and stuff.
Right.
So we can go through that very quickly until that point.
Yeah.
And we can see what are the things that we can.
Sounds good. I invited Santana actually for the meeting so that he can also benefit from the discussion. I don't know where he is. I hope he's coming at, you know, just stuck in traffic.
Okay.
We should get started, I guess.
We should get it started. So, how much do we want to...
Erase everything. It's all right.
Yeah.
How much do we want to keep this? Oops.
Yeah, we can
did I do that?
Yeah, you did.
I did that.
Unintentionally.
I thought someone came in just to say... That's nice.
Yeah,
someone don't want to hear anything.
It's a special door. You just have to wish it to be closed and it is.
It is. Okay. Yeah. So this is top secret from now on. So basically, to understand the cache working set, we need to understand just to have a solid definition of a few items. I will just list them. I will not actually go very much unless you have a question. What it is? Reuse distance. So which we use the what we use R, right? So basically we have x1, x2, all the way to xn. These are address references. So you have that in your file, address references with their locations. And we use reuse distance r of t. So t is this subscript. And we, you know, sort of look at, you know, what's the next time that this particular reference is used.
Yeah. Just to clarify, each of those RIs would pertain to a potentially different address.
Right.
So that over time, it may not make sense to look at the trend of that RI because it is all pertaining to different addresses.
Say that again.
Over time, if you look at the RI, how that progresses, it may not make much sense because it is RI with respect to the element that is being referenced at that point, and that is changing.
That is changing. That's true.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's right. Yeah. So it's basically, but this is a sort of just a base definition.
Yeah.
If you want to see at time t, any t, like a t, R2, you want to see whether this x2 is reappeared.
Yeah.
Where? And where it reappeared, it's count the number of elements in between. That is reuse distance. So that's what you think is the reuse distance is anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll go with the unique reuse distance. That is D of T. So basically, you look at, you know...
I think it's better to give example, right?
Right. Just to clarify, I mean, the unique reuse distance is actually the conventional definition. The unique, as you call it, unique, that is actually the conventional definition of reuse distance.
Reuse distance, yes. Yes.
Because it only counts the unique item.
So let's actually look at an example, right? Mm-hmm. Just come up with an example. 2, 3, 4, 3, 7, 8, 2, 1, 8.
I think these guys understand reuse distance, don't you?
Yeah.
The number of unique items between the reference to an item and a subsequent reference to the same item.
Yeah.
That's, so you don't have to worry about the example.
Oh, okay. So
yeah.
I will put an 8 here. So I just want to be very clear that the reuse distance of 8 is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's what it is. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So just...
What you call reuse distance is not the conventional reuse distance.
It's not a conventional reuse distance. And if you call it unique reuse distance, you find the elements that are actually duplicated, you delete them, and then you count how many elements there, that's the unique reuse distance. So
and
that's probably the unique reuse distance. So the reason to look at that is the look at the basically the stack difference, stack distance.
Yes. Yeah, and the other thing, just to clarify, is that the unique reuse distance can potentially change over time for the same element.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Because
as you go along,
it can change,
yes.
And an item can become more
very good. Yeah.
Reused and less reused, and so on.
Okay, and right, and then we have frequent reuse distance.
Mm-hmm.
And frequently reused distance, this is something trying to model ARC. But it's not ARC. It's basically if you have elements that never going to be repeated, you remove them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So if you look at yes. Let's suppose this is actually, you want to find the unique reuse distance of 8.
Frequent.
And, the frequent reuse distance of 8. So you know that this is the next time is actually going to be reused. You look at all these elements, and then you not only you remove all the duplicates, but also you remove the elements that are not going to be reused at all. So this is by saying that
reuse at all beyond
in the future.
Right.
Right. So if it's not reused in the future, you remove them. So this is a sort of I'm trying to use this to derive the working set, meaning that if you actually keep this element in the cache, it's a waste. They're never actually gonna be reused because by the way, all these elements that we're looking in the future. Right, so since we have traces, we do, we have 20/20 vision into the future, so we actually just look in the future and see what's going on, and we're actually trying to see whether we are able to sort of capture the working set, and if we actually know the future. So in this case, I don't know, 2 is actually being reused. 3 is being reused.
No.
Right here.
Yeah.
Oh, even including the same...
Yeah.
Including
yeah.
the
it's reused.
Uh-huh.
It's just like going from this point
okay.
and see what it is. This reused. This is not going to be reused. This is a duplicate we don't consider. And this is not going to be reused. So we get rid of that. And of course, this is not what it is. And in this case, it's at 3 elements. So the frequent reuse distance of 3, in this case, is basically you think about it...
2 elements, right? 2 and 3?
Well,
the
8 is...
8 counted. Is counted as well?
I have to look into the definition. I think 8 is counted. So the whole point here is to capture, if we have a perfect cache of infinite size, what do we want to actually keep in there?
Right.
Yeah, so that's what it is.
I think cache of infinite size is key for this to be really useful.
For this to be really useful. If, and also we have a 20/20 vision into the future. and know exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And all these things, according to that, do you have a happen to have that piece of paper? So we are just talking about the sum of definitions, so we are on the same page. And after this, I also defined the reverse reuse distance. So looking in the future is for us to understand what it is, but you know, in if you do online prediction and actually detection, whatever it is, you have to look into the past. So they have their corresponding definitions for the reverse. So the reverse versions, reverse reuse distance, reverse unique reuse distance, and the reverse frequent reuse distance. So they are denoted as this. And this.
Right.
And we don't use it here yet, but they are. So one of the things before I carry on to define working set, which is I think it's the most useful definition so far, is these are all. It can be all calculated with basically one pass through the trace. You know, just looking at the reuse distance. You just keep a set, right? So whatever being accessed, and if it's in the set or not in the set, you can calculate that. So I have a particular, if I want student help, I want you to understand how that actually can be calculated and just by passing through. And I put that into the sort of red text or text with a faint color there, how that actually can be calculated. So we can come back to this point if you have any questions. So basically, when you're processing, you just keep aside some data structures, either a stack for this, you know, the traditional reuse distance, or which we call unique reuse distance here, or for this, I really forgot what was the.
I guess you need a set and you need a hash table.
You need a something like that.
To look up whether it's accessed in the future.
Yeah, exactly. So, but in any case, these are all either one pass or two passes. And for these are actually definitely one pass. I actually thought about this at least you know just on the grand scale. That's why I think this is actually easy to calculate. So far, so good? Any? So there's no surprise definitions so far. Okay. So the next thing, let me see where we are.
Something just struck me, I think.
Yeah.
It seems like I'm not aware of any caching algorithm that takes into account the cache size when deciding whether to admit or evict.
Okay.
And we're getting there.
And you're getting there. Right?
We're getting there. Yes. Okay. All right. So now, here's the definition of reusable and not reusable. Reuse set. Set. So this definition is not very helpful, but it's sort of a set of tone. What this is going to be. So reusable set. If I can remember what it is. So if you look at x1, x2, all the way to xt minus 1, xt, and then go on, right, xn, n of them, right? So reusable working set is defined...
You mean reuse set,
correct? Reuse set can be defined as follows. You look at this point. You look at all... This is, by the way, can be calculated... fairly efficiently, but I'm just looking at the definition. You look at all previous accesses, okay? And the previous accesses, and you actually gonna remove all those elements that is not gonna reappear beyond T.
Hmm.
Okay? So if you look at, am I right? Right, yeah, so actually, if you want to get a reuse set for this, for T,
yeah,
okay, and if you look at this, If there is no access that reappeared in the future, if there is, keep it.
Mm.
If there is not, remove it. And that is what called reuse set. So think about this situation is, again, you have infinite cash, right? You take a look at that, I have infinite cash. What should I, at time t, should keep so that I can benefit? That obviously, if there is an item that's actually going to be reused in the future, I put in the cash. And if it's not, I'm going to remove it because there's no need for the cash. So that's what we call a reuse set. And I'm not going to actually go through that recursive algorithm to calculate it. It's just, you know, have some interests if you want to calculate that. I'll move on to the most, I think it's the most important definition, is called cacheable working set. So the whole point is, if I have infinite cache, I want to keep them, this is the idea of working set, right? So it is, what is a working set? Is based on reuse. If you reuse these elements, some of these elements, right? So these elements are actually going to be reused. If I have, I'm going to reuse them, I think that should be in the working set. If none of this actually going to be reused in the future, the working set, in my definition, or the reuse set in this case, is empty. So there's nothing that I quantify as a working set at all. Suppose that you have an application only sequentially access a bunch of things and never repeat them. I would say that the working set is empty. There's nothing that you keep in the working set. But if you actually constantly reuse them, I think it's for the reusability point of view, I'll keep them in the working set. That's the set that defined. I think this is deviates a little bit from the traditional working set idea that you know, you work on some memory region, it has a spatial temporal locality to some extent. So, but I think I would just want to crystallize the idea that you use, that you are actually going for temporal. We're not dealing with the spatial yet, but that's something for future definitions, maybe we can. Okay? Caching a working set. There are two kinds of cacheable working set. One's a cacheable working set for LRU, and there's a cacheable working set for ARC that I define here. And for LRU, it is like this. Okay? So cacheable working set, I'm going to use this definition. Working set at time t, again, at time t, for LRU, is going to be the set of all everything in the reusable set. Okay? And also, oh, I'm sorry, there's the important thing I forgot to introduce here. Of cache B. This is the first place, this is the caching limitation coming in. Reusable set is good. We have 20/20 vision and infinite cache. Okay? We always assume 20/20 vision into the future. Later on, we have to scale that back and looking at the reverse statistics and trying to predict the future. But right now, that's just process the trace, always assume future we can see. Okay? Now, the reuse set is good if the cache is infinite. You keep everything in the cache. Cache is not infinite. The cache is a size. So we say, if you give me a cache size, which is B, what are the most interesting things that you can keep in B? Okay, in this cache, right? And in this case, I go back to this definition of the unique reuse distance, like the stack distance that you're most familiar with. And I say, if that's the case, I'm actually going to only keep those elements with this unique distance, right? Unique reuse distance, which is shorter than B. So, for example, if this thing goes, this distance is less than B, I'll keep this.
Shouldn't it be that distance minus when it was referenced?
Yes, or, I mean that's the, this time this is referenced, and it's actually go across this barrier because I'm looking at time t. It goes across the barrier and say if there is something going, the reuse it and use it less than b. I'm going to use it, and for something this is supposed this is greater than b, it's out. So that's why I'm actually putting LRU here, right? That's because you reuse distance, basically that's your definition of reuse distance before. I'm actually going to go beyond the distance. It's never going to be cached in my RU. It's going to be sort of removed, right? And so in this case, I'm basically defining the behavior to some extent from a working set and 2020 vision also, and define what would be the working set if you are using LRU algorithm and if you have a cache size of B.
Right.
Sort of
now,
good?
Now that you're right, that's yeah, I just thought of another thing here.
Right.
What if the number of items with a reuse distance of less than B is more than B?
No, it can be.
It can be.
It can be. By definition, it can be. So suppose this is B items there. If you have B items there, you have another one and say, I need to include that. The distance, reuse distance, got to be actually longer than B.
But because we are looking at all the time in the past,
yeah,
it could be that at some point in time in the past, you could have smaller reuse distances. But now you're taking the most recent access since earlier to time t and looking in the future what is the future reuse distance
right.
for that specific item.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
Yeah.
So then you can have But you could have the case where the set of items that are have reuse distance less than b, the sum of all of those items is less than b.
It's less than b. Yes.
It's less
possible.
Than b. You can have it. So
it has to be right.
Well, less than or equals.
Less than or equals.
So I guess the question is: we have leftover space in B. What does that mean that our cacheable working set is an underestimate?
It's not an underestimate. So thinking in this case.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see what you mean.
So let's say I have only two items with reuse distance less than B. Every other item is more than B.
Mm-hmm.
With LRU, I guess we'll be missing a lot, isn't it? Because only those two items will hit, everything else will miss. And therefore, the cacheable working set for LRU becomes two, which is correct as per your definition, and it makes sense. And
so
LRU can't do anything better than that anyway, I guess.
It
so
can do
good.
Better. Yeah,
yeah,
yes, it can do anything more than that. Yeah. It will be actually flushed out by other things, right?
Right.
And
we, you know, when we did the ERSS paper,
mm-hmm.
we still
yep.
had a similar reuse set. We had an effective reuse set.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The effective reuse set, the concept there was when you had contention, then you need cache wasted space, and therefore your effective size actually is bigger than the reuse set.
Mm-hmm.
Reuse set is the conventional definition of reuse set, which is items that get accessed more than once or get reused, get added to the reuse set. This is a completely different...
This is a different definition.
Direction,
yeah.
And I think it, in my mind, it's the first definition that is based on the cache size. First definition of working set, or I'm not aware of any other definition of working set that's based on the cache size. It's interesting.
Okay, let's finish the definition, and I'll talk about the property, and then talk about how to calculate this.
Mm-hmm.
And the way how to calculate it is actually quite revealing. That's the something that we discuss and find out. That's really interesting part. So let me finish this part. So I can do the same definition for ARC. Again, this is a I should say ARC prime, is like, or ARC star, that actually can filter out all the free future, you know, non-reused accesses, right? So that we talk about this frequent reuse distance. That basically filter out anything that we see that's never going to be reused.
Mm.
All those items are not considered at all. So it's like a T1 list of infinite size, right? And filter out everything. So in this case, I'm going to, instead of looking at a reuse the unique reuse distance, I'm looking at the frequent reuse distance. So this is a sort of a filter out anything that is, we already talked about what frequent reuse distance is just get rid of all the items that are actually never being reused. Okay, and we have the same definition here. So you have size B, and we can actually look at this, and then actually look at the reuse set, and then sort of get rid of all the items that are not with a distance actually bigger than B. Okay. So we're okay so far.
So I'm not sure about the definition of arc there. So you eliminate all the repeated elements, and then.
And you also eliminate elements that are not reused.
So for me, the definition of reuse distance.
Frequent reuse distance.
No, reuse distance for arc would be that at the point in time that the page is reaccessed. If you have a maximum size B, or you have a set of states in which your cache is through the execution of the accesses, right? And then my definition is that if you reaccess the element and the cache state of arc will have that page in it, then that reuse distance is less than B.
So that's a different definition of the frequent reuse distance. His frequent reuse distance itself has a B parameter. So delta T of B.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah.
So I don't know if
I think we talk about this, right? We talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
So you could think about that. Actually, you try to mimic the RC a little bit better in terms of that. The T1 list is not infinite long, but it's finite, with a given size like B or something like that. So we only be able to filter out accesses or one-time accesses within a given range,
yes.
Right? And that could be a definition. As I said, this, you know, we talk about this.
Yeah, that's an alternate definition.
It's an alternative definition. We can actually... consider that later on as we actually try to approach ARC more accurately, right? There's no way we can precisely, so far I don't know how to do that, precisely to do ARC, because the list changes, right? It changes. But this is just a sort of approximation. So let's say this is like, what I see is, if I have 20/20 vision, and my mind is set to try to find the real working set. So it's like, I'm using this, it's not for any particular caching algorithm, but if I actually can look into this, trying to sort of decipher the application behavior, not really from a caching point of view, just application behavior, how do I capture working set in that case? And I can capture working set simply using this reused set. That's too general, it's too big. And so that's why we introduced this. And of course, say, well, that has to be a specific type of caching algorithm in mind, and really, refine it. We could actually talk about something else. That's a very good point. Now, let me introduce some of the properties. I think with the properties, we see the value added thing about introducing these elements. I'll just take a look at that. So since you're not looking at it, so I don't have to. So I need to remove something. So this definition is easy enough for me to remove. I would leave this. And what are the properties? Well, the first property is if you think about the working set, the same type of working set, whatever that is, ARC or LRU, if B1 is less than B2, I suppose, and I can say that this thing belongs to so that means if I have a bigger cache, I have a superset. That's what it is.
Mm.
If I have a bigger cache, so the B, I can look at, longer, that kind of superset. So this is actually a good property. You can argue about this hierarchical behavior of this working set.
Mm.
Right? So if your working set is hierarchical, and so that means that if you have a general application, if you look at the machine application, the whole machine, all the application running a whole machine, and consider its working set, it has to be a superset of a smaller application. I stretched that a little bit too far, but I think we can actually establish some kind of, if we are actually plotting the set size, the working set size, And as a function of B, we're gonna see that staircase behavior, or at least it's sort of non-decreasing.
We have to take a snapshot at a certain point in time.
At a
certain T.
At time T.
Mm-hmm.
So I would presume this T would be some of the, say, stable behavior, some
mm-hmm.
kind of a within a phase or something like that.
Makes sense.
Okay, and
it would be interesting to see what happens when you pick a non-stable T. To see what happens there, that could be revealing too.
Right. Yeah. Well. Okay. The other thing is when this. Basically, when I do a limitation of this B goes to infinity, this thing should approaching what? Reset, right? So if you consider infinite cache, yeah, that's what it is,
mm.
right? Reset. I don't know what did I use to reset. RT. That's reset. So that's means that you look infinite in the future again. That's the infinite size. That's what it is. There is something about the WT, I think it's LRU, should be part of the working set of ARC at certain cache B here. ARC is more stringent, right? The distance is that right, Raju? We talked about this, right? I'm sorry.
No, it should be the other way around, I think. Yes, ARC working set should be smaller than LRU working set.
Because the distance is smaller, right?
Yeah, it should be the other way around.
Hmm?
Should be the other way around, I think.
Now, we know that this is true. Right?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, yeah, right. You're right. Yeah.
Right. So the reuse distance gotta be bigger than the
unique reuse distance.
The unique distance
should be
bigger than
the
future training out. And so this is not really
this is correct.
Very critical, but I think this is probably the best used property.
Hmm.
So I'll start by the properties now. The last item I want to talk about is how to calculate this cash flow unit working set. And that actually, I think, is revealing. So this is how I'm going to calculate it. All right. Let's assume that, let's just pick a RRU, right? At time zero, the ARC would be the same. At time zero, this is empty, right? So we don't have time zero. There's always one, but let's just do time zero. Now, suppose at time t, I want to look at if you have, in this case, this is going to be the lines over here. Mm-hmm. I already know the cacheable working set at t minus 1,
mm-hmm.
whatever that algorithm is. I don't need it sort of defined to RRU, just any of these things, right? Just RRU. Okay. So you know this. The next admitted item will be this, right? So it's just consider whether XT going to be admitted into the cache or not, right? So there are going to be three cases. And as a matter of fact, later on, we're going to actually break up into four cases. Three cases. So suppose XT was in this. So XT is part of this set.
Just the same.
Right? Well, that's where it is. Is that actually going to be admitted, or what should we do?
Mm-hmm.
It was part of this. However, if you look at its reuse distance, with what's the definition? D, right? DT is actually greater than B.
Because even DT changes.
Okay. Yeah.
DT, no, not DT.
DT, yes, for RRU.
DT of XT.
Okay.
Yeah, but when I say T, is that means that time T.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
I just try to reduce the number
of
parentheses. So if this is greater, so this means this, you know, although DT, XT was here,
yeah.
right, somehow reused and it's less than T, and when I actually try to admit it now, the reuse distance is further away, or never is going to be infinite in that case.
Yeah.
Right? So it's actually going to be bigger, so we're going to remove it. So it's a remove.
For DT plus 1, for WT plus 1, actually.
For
Aren't we computing?
We have WT here. Now we actually try to see
WT plus
WT. No, just T. We have T minus 1 here.
I know.
You want to get T.
But shouldn't XT, the guy who has been accessed, be part of the working set now? Otherwise, it will be a miss.
Well, here is the what it is, right? So if you have the XT, we're not sure that, you know, this one should definitely stay in the working set, which is doable. If you look at XT, you look at it and say, well, you're never actually going to be reused again, which is, in this case, which is greater than.
So you access it and then remove it, if it's already in the cache.
It's in the working set.
If it's already in the cache, you access it and then you...
You remove it.
You don't need to remove it, but that's a candidate for the frontline candidate for eviction.
So this is eviction.
Hmm.
So needs to be removed. At least I'm not talking about very very careful. I'm not talking about cache algorithm yet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just talking about my definition of working set.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if in my view of working set, you are never actually going to be used within the B distance, you're out.
Mm-hmm.
You're not part of the working set anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's case number one. Case number two is when XT was not in WT minus one, right? However, the reuse distance is less equal than B. So that means I was not there, Now suddenly there's a new item comes, and hey, I will reuse immediately, right, within cache reuse distance B. And in this case, it's you should act. This is by the way, this is what I call a departure event.
Yeah.
This is a what kind of arrival event. So that means this new item needs to be there. On the other hand, if all the other cases, it's just the previous, you maintain the same set. Otherwise. So I have a recursive algorithm. I can actually just go from the very beginning and sort of trying to remove things from the set or add things to the set as long as I know at
mm-hmm.
every point what
mm-hmm.
the what DT is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Okay, so far so good. So this is where interesting start taking place. There are actually four cases, and we can analyze now. There are four cases. Let me expand this a little bit. There are four cases because there are two cases in here,
mm-hmm.
and one is really looking at them carefully. So let's suppose. XT was not in WPT minus 1, so type 1 event, okay, was not here. Of course, you have the same definition where LRU is the same. It's just using, instead of using unique, you use frequent distance.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's not there, and D of T is, say, less than B, right? So this is the cache will do the good thing. The cache here, the LRU cache, we're talking about LRU, I suppose.
Mm.
So the LRU cache is do the correct thing. You touch upon a new item that is not in the cache.
Mm.
It's a cache miss. Right?
Yeah.
And you act the item enter cache. Right? This is a good thing. So you touch upon something was not in your cache. Of course, in my definition, was not in the working set. And it has a reuse distance that you see. We cause cache miss. And so what LRU would do. However, the thing is, cache only did this correctly. The other case is cache is not behaving what it should be. Type 2 event, I just made up this right now, but so that we can talk about this. So XT was not here, and DT is greater than B. So if you have 20/20 vision, you say this item, even though it was not in my cache, but in future I'm not using it, right? In the future I'm not using it within this distance. In LRU, it causes a cache miss, but it should not enter cache.
Mm.
Right? So this could be an indicator which we can use if we design a new cache algorithm, right? If we can actually somehow, of course, we're going to look in the past, you will see the unique distance actually is longer or infrequent or whatever that mechanism. We decipher this is actually, or there is a way of predicting that it's actually greater than B. We don't enter it in the cache,
mm-hmm.
right? So type 3.
But LRU...
RU will do that. Enter cache right away. Right?
Right.
You touch a new item, that's in the top of the stack, right? I push that on top of the stack.
So this is LRC in some sense.
Instead of a ghost list, it's actually a history of all the unique items that have been accessed within the unique items that have been accessed.
No.
A size B list.
So the whole point of having the ghost list on top of LRU is that and if this
you're talking about LRC now, right?
Yeah, but LRC will modify
the size
of the list.
Yeah.
So if you have a ghost list exactly the size of the cache, and then you have this ghost list ages, meaning that if the last time that this page was accessed is larger than B, which is the size of the cache, then you remove it out of the ghost list. And
wouldn't
then
LRU do, if the ghost list is LRU, wouldn't it happen automatically anyway if you control the size of the LRU list?
Not necessarily, but yes.
Yes.
Yes, it would.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so yes. So then if it's in the ghost list, it means that it was missed recently,
mm-hmm.
or it was reused recently.
So you
can make that decision.
Yeah, based on the ghost list.
Based on the ghost list.
We had an algorithm that did that.
Yeah.
Yours.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I'll continue to finish this, and then we can have more discussion. And the next one, it was in the working set.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm just using RRU here, and nothing changes.
Hit.
It's a hit. Yeah, sorry. Cache hit. Alright, so this is a hit.
Keep it there.
And keep it there. And stable.
Mm.
Right? So the working set has just nothing that we need to do. So if we... These are events I want to record. And actually, I can also record to realize the phase shifts. I want to actually build up a ground truth. That, you know, in doing this, the original idea was try to build up a ground truth and whether how the working set is shifting or is a transition between the working set. There's the phases, whether we can identify phases and see whether there's phase transition. So in this particular case, and remain there. And by the way, this is also a stable phase too,
mm-hmm.
right? So nothing changed with the working set.
Mm-hmm.
And type 4, right? And of course, it's there. And DT is greater than B.
Mm-hmm.
And this is cost evasion. Right.
It adds XT. I mean, it could very well be evicted right away, but you don't have to because
right.
it is not a cache.
However, in cache, that's a cache hit.
Hmm.
That's confirmation. This should be in the cache, but in terms of the definition from the working set, this should be evicted because the eviction only happens. If you look at the working set, this Curtis definition, the only time things removed from the working set is XT. It's the new item you just actually introduced, new access.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, it will be the eviction. I'm not talking about eviction from the cache, I'm just talking about eviction from working set.
Mm-hmm.
It's eviction from working set. And this is a difference between the cache algorithm and the working set, which have the 2020 vision. That should be evicted.
The thing is that the only detail here I see is that you cannot actually do step type 4 using reverse.
Yeah.
Because the reason it's in the cache is because the reverse is smaller than B.
And it also assumes type 3.
But as for forward, future knowledge, it should not be part of the working set. Right?
But, well, let's keep that thinking about what we can do about it in a second. So here are several things. So far, all these definitions, now comes the idea. So all these things can be calculated. Distances, a reused distance, unique distance, frequent distances, working set, we can calculate. I think we were... And also all these events, in terms of whether it's type 1, type 2, type 3, type 4, you can calculate it right there by just processing. And so right now, there are several things I said I'd be interested. There are actually probably more things interested here. So one thing is to look at the correlation between, say, reuse distance and reverse reuse distance.
Mm-hmm.
The unique distance, so versus, right? The reverse unique reuse distance. And also the frequent reuse distance and its reverse. How to look at it? We can do a scatter plot and just take a look that if we can either plot this over time or do a scatter plot and see whether these pair of values are always positively correlated.
Mm.
And if they're positively correlated, this one big, the other one big, the other one, if this thing small, the other thing small. And if they are correlated, they form a line. And in that case, if they are, that's a strong evidence that we can use the past to predict the future. Because if this thing is small, we can say future is small too, with very high confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and that would be, we can expect it to be more likely during the stable phase, and less likely during the, and so that you could use that
as a
but you don't have the future, so I'm trying to see whether you can use something as an indicator of phase change, but. Regardless, sorry to interrupt.
Right. So, I guess this is just, I can't say anything at this point because we don't have the data. And once we have the data, use the traces, we can see whether this is something that we can make use of. The other one is the distribution. So this is something, the first thing we can see. I don't want to erase that, I want to erase this. Need a bigger board.
I need two boards.
you send a request that they would do that.
A big one.
A bigger board.
Yeah, you send a request that would do that.
Yeah.
So the second thing we can look at is the distribution of RT, BT, and Del T. And this one, we can tell us the distribution, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we say, what's the distance? Basically, you're going to see, the distance is, this is the frequency. This
mm-hmm.
is the size, right?
Mm-hmm.
The DT or RT or DLT, whatever, right? And this one, I want to see whether there is a staircase behavior.
You have to... identify a span of time, right? Or
you can, yes. Either a time is there, and say during a stable period, this is directly sort of a try to address your motivation section,
mm-hmm.
and you say that we look at that. There is the cache size here and the straddle on the plateau.
We already have DT, by the way, right? Steven, we have the distribution of DT for a bunch of words. For certain phases.
If you're done with the ARU, you probably...
For certain phases.
Or in the past.
We have frequency information. I guess I have something similar to get... You. No, I don't have that.
I think
remember whether
time.
You're going to look past or look in the future.
Yeah.
So there is a difference here.
Yeah. You actually have within a phase, you looked at frequency distribution of specific items.
Yeah.
Right? That's DT. Within a stable
no,
phase.
No, it was just a counter within the phase in order to get the frequency in the phase.
Yeah.
But now with the...
So isn't that equivalent to DT in a stable phase? No?
I don't feel it necessarily is.
Mm.
But yeah. So...
Why do you think so? I mean, what is DT? DT is
DT is a
unique reuse distance.
Yeah, unique reuse distance. So it's the number of unique items in between each use, or from the current use to the next use of an item, including itself, or to have that plus one, I guess.
Right.
But no, frequency.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Is a different
number. Yeah, that's true. Right. So that is the distribution of frequencies of axes to items. Here is the distribution of distances. This is the distribution of distances. So I don't know if it addresses my motivation.
It has. This one is actually say what would be appropriate cache sizes, right? So if you have staircase. Right, so that means that mostly the distance is short, or versus mostly actually it's a long tail or something. Mm-hmm. If that's the case, sort of have some, right?
I guess the other thing is that how do you compute, you have a bunch of distances, you could have multiple distances for the same item, right? In a specific duration.
Okay.
Multiple distance of the same item. What
yeah, because if you're looking at,
so let's say,
is this a point in time?
This is for all times.
For all times. So
all
for
times.
The same item can have multiple reuse distances.
Yeah.
So you're throwing in all those reuse distances into a bag and plotting the distribution.
May not. You can sort of look at a specific items or those actually in this sort of a.
You could look at, for instance, the distance, this distribution of items in the cacheable working set.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Of items in the cacheable working set.
Or something like that. Although, yeah, that's true. Yes. So, yeah.
So there, you'll get a plot similar to what you said. If you do DT of items in the cacheable working set at that point in time,
Yes.
Yeah. Then you might end up with what you have. But even then, it's a little bit approximation.
Yeah. It probably it also starts a lot earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So there could be difference just from that.
This is actually number three. The number one is... I forgot. Out of order. Just to try to keep the order. So you plot this thing... And minus this thing. Over time.
So forward minus reverse.
Yeah, just every time you have this.
Yeah.
And so.
Can you see positive correlation or negative correlation?
Be as close to zero.
Yeah, you see
possible.
Some correlations there. And also there's some significant time variant features that you can see whether there's so I don't know what I'm looking for, as a matter of fact. It's pure speculation in trying to plot the data and see if we can discover anything. Right. So that's what it is.
So Steven questions.
Yeah.
No, just I have no idea how to plot this. I have an idea of how to get all the information.
Oh, okay.
But the plotting is just going to be interesting.
You only plot one pair at a time over T.
If you have all the RT and reverse RT, Then you can do RT minus reverse RT and plot it, right?
Yeah, I could do that.
Or
I meant to some of the other stuff, I guess.
Oh.
I know what the confusion was. I just didn't know what particular T we were going to be using.
1, 2, 3, 4. What do you mean?
So,
what did we all look?
If you're trying to get
T.
All...
It's
I don't know what I'm thinking now that I'm thinking about it. Sorry.
So it's okay. So,
the distribution over time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a movie as opposed to a plot.
That's a movie, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a movie.
So a movie or... you can do a plot on this. And you could probably do this very easily. I actually
but
say
if
something.
You want to do it for every T of distribution, then it has to be a movie.
Not distribution. Did I say distribution? I'd say this is
oh, one. That number. I'm thinking about number two, actually.
Oh, you're saying
yeah,
number two.
That's
number one.
Partially, but I was still kind of thinking about
it. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. Right.
Right. But that's fine. I think we can...
Yeah. There are more things. Of course, we can actually plot, you know, how these events happen.
Can you lend it to me this? I didn't bring this harder.
I'm probably running about 50 or something. Let me pull the track.
I just need to log in to my computer.
So the other thing is plot the size of this over different...
Nice.
And different times.
Different time and different B.
Okay.
Yes. Same time, different B.
Same time, different B, or
same B,
different time.
Yeah.
So there are two different plots, and just look at the W T here over T and
B constant.
Constant B here. Over for different B const T, right?
Mm.
So something like that. So we want to see what. So the first one, we want to see whether the working set actually make changes over time. That the site, if we say we can capture phase transition by looking at the size of working set. That's one way. If that's what we can do, we can really precisely identify the phase transition. But I question about that a little bit. Maybe not. I just don't know. So this is one way to see that whether we can actually capture phase transition just looking at that.
Right. The type 4 is what I'm concerned about. Type 4 cannot be
predicted.
Predicted. Yeah.
Well, it depends on how good this one is correlating with the reverse.
When you evict something from the working set, it's typically when there is a phase change. And that means that whatever correlation you had before does not hold in the future, or at least in the near future. Whatever distance you had before does not correlate well with that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But not necessarily in the sense, right? I mean, you can still, even in the phase, there are transitions. I mean, there are... You can't really just say so every, the cache content shouldn't change. If there is a cache content change, that's a phase transition. It's in the finest detail, yes. Right, if you're working set in finest detail, any of the events that causes the unstable, right? So these are stable things, right? And if it's unstable, and you say that's a phase transition.
Yeah.
And I think that I actually get larger scale and say, well, there is things that percentage of these things that happen. And we're going to say, you absolutely is a dangerous thing. Because that means it's very sensitive. Your detector is super sensitive in that case. I suspect that's the case. So there will be cache evictions, not cache evictions, working set evictions. Maybe during the phase, but it still actually fall below our threshold to quantify that as a cache a phase transition.
So I was just wondering if, let's say, you go into type 4 and you But then you cannot, since you can't see the future, you won't be able to distinguish between type 4 and type 3, right?
Not until about B later. Exactly.
Not until about B later.
Which should be when you evict it.
Which is when you should certainly evict that guy.
Yeah.
So that could potentially be used. But my question is, does LRU and ARC do it anyway? Will LRU and ARC manage to do that anyway at that time? I guess they will, right?
They did that at that time, but there could be more than just that particular item.
Actually, no, hold on. We can do something better than that. We should evict... Here's the thing. Whatever DT we have, we should evict this guy if it's not accessed within DT. Within its real system. As opposed to the cache size. What LRU will do is wait until B, whereas we can evict it right after DT expires.
Yeah.
That is something we already did, right? I mean, we created an algorithm where we attach the number of misses. It's not the same, but number of misses for each item since the previous one for items in the cache. And then we evicted the guy. If there was a need for eviction, we evicted the guy that had a smaller number than the guy that was currently being accessed.
Yeah.
We did that. I wonder what happened to that.
We have the results for it.
Now? Oh, we had it before, so I think you have a summary for it. Oh, this is the new one?
No. I got a results for that algorithm that you're talking about. And it didn't work out very well. Compared to the other ones. So I implemented...
And that's the number of misses. This is a different metric, though. This is a reuse distance.
Yeah, this reuse distance. It could work differently.
Which would be...
Just an LRU. Keeps history.
Which is actually...
But it should be implemented on top of LRU because that we can define more precisely than ARC. ARC was until we
so
don't have a definition.
The question is, if we use this metric instead of our number of misses metric... How does it change? Because I think this is more accurate.
Like previous reuse distance?
Yeah. Previous reuse distance.
For ARC.
For ARC.
For ARC it would be awesome.
No, not for ARC, but for LRU.
No, but in the sense that for ARC it would be even better.
Sure.
Because for LRU you can predict that it was used less than B. Right?
At least
less than B.
Right, but the thing is that we can make it an eviction candidate even earlier than that. If it's not reused within DT,
then
we can get rid of it because its reuse profile is changing.
But that's a different algorithm, right?
Different...
But how will we check for that, especially efficiently?
Yeah, exactly. Because that's a thing where you have to check then the whole cache to make it an eviction candidate, right? Instead, we could check the victim and compare its reuse distance. Say, like, okay, were you used in the amount of time? No.
Pardon. I'm just trying to think of something.
I mean, but for LRU is simple, right? Because if you're the possible victim, then you weren't used for the least B minus one last accesses, right? So you are a candidate for eviction. Well, this would be pretty interesting for ARC, because for ARC we don't have a definition to do this. But for ARC, using the information from the past, then we can say, like, okay, so we have the last time that this guy was reused, and then we can define something with it. Potentially.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. But
question is, how much accounting do we need for that? We need accounting for each item. The reason why we said number of misses since last access, because that was a global counter as opposed to item specific counter.
Yeah, it will be an item for each.
But it's worth thinking about it, even if we have to update an item-specific counter on each access to see what is the gain with that kind of overhead, right?
Yeah, it would be a number, an access number for each of the elements in the cache.
In the cache, right? Yes, only the elements in the cache.
Yeah. Right. And that's it. You don't need like.
Right. Yeah. So it's out. It's out. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Let me finish that. I probably got less than 10 minutes to be here. So I need to.
So the other thing is plotting different for different B for the size.
This is a sort of again getting back to the original concern about the staircase behavior. This is where it is. And the other thing, the last thing, I say that one can one might be. You know, I might be able to see is if you think about the eviction event and admission, that means entering event, arrival and departure, and the other two are stable events.
Mm-hmm.
If I actually try to plot the arrival process and departure process, I might be able to sort of see whether this is there a stable arrival event and versus a stable departure event for me to decipher whether I can actually detect phase changes.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of just looking at the processes and the time, you know, for example, inter-arrival time of this evasion. And arrival time, inter departure time, whatever it is, looking at this and see whether there is a stability in that, and for me to detect the cache miss and so that's something that I was thinking. That's pretty much it.
It's very interesting stuff, Jason.
Or something to
quite thought provoking. I haven't read a paper that formally models cache behavior like this. So
one thing I would like to see if you know, one of you two can help actually get the reuse distance, I mean those things, so that we can actually start to see whether this is of any way actually useful.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you get counters, as you ask the sort of the distances for the accesses, that actually can be obtained either by one pass or two passes at most through. I think one pass is probably you can get it. And the second pass, I actually try to get you know, all these type 1, type 2, type 3, type 4 events. And by that, we have all the information needed for processing, looking at any plots and if we need and so on and so forth. So,
of these, which don't we need of all these definitions for the subsequent more interesting metrics, which we don't we need to compute at all?
Straight up reuse.
Huh?
Straight up reuse distance doesn't mean we as use is the at least the
unique
reuse distance.
Yeah, the only thing we care about is unique.
Reuse.
We don't care about the non-unique reuse distance. I don't think we need to worry about that.
Not nearly as much.
Mm.
Not nearly as much.
But it'd still be interesting to have.
But if it's interesting to have, it's not really taking too much time to. It's just like keeping a set, and every time just look at the set whether you have it or not.
No. You need to know how many times each item is accessed for the non-unique. Non-unique is not a set, right? You need to maintain...
What are you talking about?
The non-unique reuse distance.
Non-unique reuse distance. Oh, you mean the reuse set?
That's
no, no,
talking.
No. Reuse distance. Non-unique reuse.
Oh, non-unique
reuse.
The
first, very
the
first.
The very first.
Like
right, right, yeah, but that's easy to calculate, right?
Looking for the forward?
Yeah.
No, what I meant is, if we calculate at least, that's a sort of one of the indicators we can keep around and see whether that's interesting to...
Temp.
Yeah, so the non-unique reuse distance, I don't see how we're going
to
use it.
Yeah, they want to...
That's all carbon. Thanks.
Maybe not.
Hmm.
I'm just saying.
And the thing
maybe.
Is that reuse distance has already been defined to be non-unique. Oh, sorry,
like
unique. It's already been defined to be unique. So I think we can just, you know, not worry about the first one. Just start from the second one onwards.
Well, calculation-wise.
But I'm saying that from for us, from a conceptual standpoint, I don't think we had to worry about reuse distance. The non-unique reuse.
Right.
Because we are reusing the reuse distance definition, which is known.
Mm-hmm.
We are creating a new definition, which is a frequent reuse distance, which I think may have to come up with a different name for it. Because
if you have a better name, yeah, please do it. It took me a while to really... I went through several things like frequent, unique reuse distance or non-unique, you know. That's
the frequent reuse distance is interesting. I think that
the smaller, the more to your user.
Yeah, we can eventually whatever the shape or form doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
I think if we can capture the essence of that and take along that,
so
that's.
So I think we're done with this part, right? So Ricardo, do you want to tell us quickly what you've been doing, what you're up to?
Yeah,
your new algorithm.
Okay, so I got a new idea, but so I was thinking a lot about what you said the other day about the formulas and how to think how they got to that logic and. You know,
mm-hmm.
So the first thing that I did is implement Lark as a prototype and run the experiments to see if whatever I was thinking made sense.
How does Lark do in comparison to Arc? For all the workloads,
it doesn't do much better. I mean,
does it do much?
No,
worse?
What I discovered is that our algorithms do more. I mean, when we have Arc on top of the ghost list, we do a little bit better than them. Average, right?
Than a Lark.
Yes. So they do something right, but they're still, I think that all the filtering algorithms as a whole, they have some characteristics that are not as good. So I got some charts.
I was going to take a picture of that. So
I don't even have that in the
paper.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You know how to use this
better. So. Wow.
You know, in the future,
can you email this to me, please?
Yeah, right.
Can you email it to me?
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. So that I can pull it up on this machine.
You know, this is where we're actually, you know, it should be compared, you know, 50 years later, we're like comparing the computer science 50 years ago.
Still,
in the future,
email us to write
your comments. Right.
You want to email just that file?
No, the graphs.
No,
all the graphs.
Oh, all the graphs?
Yeah.
All right. So what I can do, could I quickly just get some Gmail account?
You already have everything there, so it's faster.
Compose it to...
So what the whole point is analyzing what are the faults. Did you take the picture already? Can I erase that? Or?
Yeah, you can.
I just want to sort of interject here. I have 5 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. That I have another...
Oh, you haven't finished. Okay.
But no, I finished. I finished already.
Okay.
So, what
but
I'm
he has to leave in 5 minutes.
I have to leave in 5 minutes.
Okay, don't worry.
Sorry.
Don't worry.
Yeah.
Go ahead. So, quickly, what I want to do, I analyze what are the weaknesses of the current filtering algorithms as they are. So there are two things that I think that are most important. One thing is one of the points that Raju made recently is that when you have the problem about Lark, when we were discussing it, is that when you have you make the decision whatever not to increase or decrease the size of the ghost list
mm-hmm.
in each hit and each miss.
Right, yeah.
And this is not ideal, right? Because then if you have a workload where you have a high, you have a stable, you have a stability on the hits, but you have a really high miss rate, so this percentage of hits, this is like 15% or a very low number.
Right, yeah.
And this is stable across, but you have very high misses. Then you, what you would do, or Lark, as he will behave, he will have the cash, and he will have this ghost list
yeah.
in the beginning like this. But since it has really high miss rates, or really high number of misses, this will remain most of the time at the maximum, which is 9/10 of the sizes. So.
Right, yeah.
And this is not the ideal thing because then when you do this, you will potentially evict this part of the working set that's causing the hits. So you can potentially make things worse. You want this part of the working set that's making this 15% always here.
Right.
So the first thought that I have is not make this change the size of the list on every hit or on every miss. But I want to analyze the hit rate of the execution of the cache. So if the hit rate is stable, you shouldn't make decisions on whether or not to increase this. If you're making things worse, then you increase the size of the ghost list to a certain point, and then to potentially change whatever you have in the cache, because it means that the phase is changing somehow. And the same on the other way around. If you improve on hits, then you shouldn't change that, so you reduce the size. But I think the hit rate is a better indicator of whether or not it's stable or not. So I was thinking, okay, so maybe I can just do this directly on the hit rate, but it came to me that as you continue the execution of the algorithm or the cache algorithm, the standard deviation of the hit rate will be lower and lower as you increase the number of accesses.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking of a way of representing this,
mm-hmm.
multiplying by a factor or doing something like that that would help me notice these changes better, but
mm-hmm.
I haven't come up with a good solution.
How about just using the hit rate based on the last few accesses?
So that was
which
one
is
of
what
the,
Steven has been doing.
So there is
over
one
a couple periods.
There's yeah, exactly. So if we grab a window, the one problem is that we don't know how much is the size of a window. And then if you have this characteristic, it may be that the last, for example, 1,000 of misses.
Right.
Of accesses were misses.
So
mm-hmm.
I have 2 minutes, so let me just interject here and then I'll be gone. Sorry, I have to leave. So in network, this is actually a soft problem in terms of trying to see the averages and deviations.
Uh-huh.
And one way to do that, like TCP algorithm, in actually trying to figure out what's the round trip time and the variances of the round trip time.
Mm-hmm.
The way they do that is doing those weighted average. So you take the it's basically always the formula, right? The new value x, you know, like x prime is always some alpha of the old one, and the one minus alpha of the new value. So new value is, let me put this as x, right? So it's of x. So if you want to see what the averages of that thing is, every time you add new values, it's just weighted average. The same thing
yeah.
applies for standard deviation as well. Is they always do averages with a different instead of alpha, they do a beta.
Hello.
And that's the way.
Okay,
if you want to say you don't want to sort of quantify a particular window,
oh, yes.
and try to find what's the standard
can
deviation.
Can I call
what's that alpha?
Trickle in
alpha is like
0.5, 0.25.
or 1/8.
Okay, great.
Oh,
thank you.
Something. It's yeah. It's like a.
Oh,
the,
Fitzpatrick. Oh, okay.
It's
okay.
Like a
future. Yeah, well,
yeah,
thank
it's
you very much.
And they pick that value. They understand that value.
You don't have
well.
To call me back.
Oh, okay. So they
yeah.
they have already proved that value works.
Yeah,
well.
The max will work well.
So I want something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let me send something. I have to go. Let me send you something. Just one slide to show that.
Yeah. Yes.
And then you know.
That will be interesting
too. All right,
thank
so
you.
I have to go. Sorry, it's another meeting. So,
do students call you about Teacher's Day?
Teacher?
Wishing you about Teacher's Day. Today is Teacher's Day, but
yeah.
I'm just gonna call saying Happy
oh,
Teachers.
Please. Like, anyway,
it's nice of the students.
We can continue this discussion. I think next meeting we said not on Tuesday, right?
Probably Wednesday.
Or
yeah.
Well, just
it has
just
to be Wednesday, I think,
well,
because
Wednesday.
I can't make it on Tuesday.
Can we
that
do a doodle or something like so that we can figure out the day? Wednesday is
next week is crazy for me.
Crazy.
It's an exception.
Yeah,
it's an exception. But
so
the following week,
let's talk about what's the next time.
Yeah.
And then how to follow up this.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the first idea that I have. That we should analyze. The hit rate instead of analyzing hits, just saying we had a hit, let's make a decision.
Yeah.
Because then we have a counterexample for that, right?
Yeah.
And then there is the other case in which we see in these graphs, Lark is the brown, the last one,
mm-hmm.
the last of you can see.
So misses are lower, and sometimes they're higher.
Sometimes
but these are more normalized for we're using?
Normalized for arc.
Arc. Normalized
yeah.
for arc, yeah. Okay, sometimes they are higher significantly. Sometimes they are lower significantly, like in this case. Right, misses. And in those cases, LARC seems to be doing as well or even better than all the variants we created, right?
Yes.
Right.
So the hits, I like the hits graph better, but yeah, for me it's easier to understand.
Okay, I'll bring up the hits. Normalized hits. You have a normalized hits plot?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm seeing them.
That's evictions.
Yeah, you already passed them.
I already passed it.
Yeah, it's right there.
These are normalized?
They're normalized
they're
hits.
All normalized.
Yeah. That's what I said. So, yeah. This is one that I... Okay, so we have cases...
There are a couple of exceptions, right?
Right. But these exceptions are the same for even our algorithms.
Mm.
And you see that even in these exceptions, our arc is doing better than Lark. But in bad cases, we can see the Lark... is actually
better
in cases that are hard.
It's more stable.
It's more stable, yeah.
Mm.
But in average, it's not as good as our arc. Our arc, in some cases, is even better.
Mm.
So, one thing that I notice is that there's cases where all the filtering algorithms are bad, in general.
Mm.
And those are the cases we should focus on. And so I got some other idea, which is that sometimes filtering is not good, right?
Mm.
So if you're gonna modify the size of this thing, we might as well go to a certain point that we say like filtering is not helping right now.
Yeah.
Let's just change the working set,
mm.
and once we improve hits again, then we'll start filtering again.
Right, that's what Steven has been working on as well. Similar idea.
Yeah, it did not help that much for mine, but...
what you were modifying LARC, right? You started from LARC and you started modifying it, or...
Well, it was mine, but...
okay, yeah.
But at...
So maybe you want to talk about that. You guys, are you talking about what each of you are doing? That would be a good idea.
Yeah. But yeah, I changed up the formula of what I had a little bit, and if I set the new phase limit to 1.0, it acts exactly like LARC, although miss rates and everything else seem to be the same. Okay. So one of the things I tried doing was a ghost size of C, a ghost list of C. Another thing I tried around, I played around with was allowing things to automatically go in there if I detected a new phase, or, you know, of course, population. And then I combined both of them to see how the result would be. And I mean, I only got the results, what, tomorrow, yesterday? But for the most part, I and the ghost seem to be about the same, sometimes maybe a little better, depending on still that new phase variable. Having the, allowing it to go straight in almost never seemed to actually help me.
Yeah, that's because you're using the conventional LARC trigger to filter
check
out,
check.
To allow direct admission, correct?
Yeah, so it pretty much I think goes to LRU, right?
Looking at stability of that.
Yeah.
Of that metric, which is what Ricardo is talking about and we talked about, right? But we said that let's maybe use your previous miss rate stability.
That was
going
to be
metric.
One of the next things to try and look at.
Right. But here you could do something else like what Jason is suggesting.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yes.
I would hope that could pan out something.
And
really cool.
And if I can get so I got 3 points in time for having numbers of previous accesses, right? So when I have a victim here, let's say that this is LRU, so it's easier. I have an access that is here, so it's an access that was old. That's old. And then I got the same access for the same page.
The second
and
is a ghost list, I'm assuming.
This is the ghost list.
Yeah.
It's ghost. This is the
cache.
So I got the victim here, I got the old, and I got the new page. So what I was thinking is saying, anyway, since I'm hitting the ghost list, I'm going to cast on the victim. That's not going to change. What's going to change is how I decide this
increases or decreases.
So because we already went this way, that we compare these three and we say, like, okay, we're not going to make an eviction, but I think we should still cast an eviction, but we decide whether or not to increase the size. So we compare, we have the numbers, we have the hit rate for this one.
Mm-hmm.
We have the hit rate for the three of them, and we can compare. So I was thinking of comparing the hit rate of the two more most distant ones, but I don't know if that makes
sense.
So
this is just an improvement over LARC, the way I see it. Slight modification of LARC to try and make it a little better than what it is.
In this part, it is. But then, this is just to make a decision, right? So this is just a little improvement over LARC. But I think it's going to influence a lot in the results, in the sense that you already have workloads that can blow this out and then say, like, okay, this is not good. And then there's the other thing that I wanted to do is once that this is decided, that I can say, like, okay, compare the hit rate of A versus the hit rate of E, then I can decide whether or not to turn this on or off. So instead of having an upper bound to this element, instead of saying that, oh, we have 9/10 of C, we don't have an upper bound here. We just we do have a boundary or of 9/10 of C, but this just to say, like, if we exceed with our formula, with our new formula, if we exceed this size, then we decide to turn filter enough. And the whole reason behind it is that the reason that ARC and LRU in some cases do way better than our filtering algorithms is because they decide they always make an eviction. They're always making an eviction. And in those cases, that's the right thing to do.
So you still allow the ghost list to slowly increase until 9 over 10, and then you shut off.
Then I shut off. Because it means that our filtering is not working very well.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm just wondering. Yeah, I think it's certainly worth doing. Certainly worth doing. But the 9 over 10 is going to keep, it's going to increase and then decrease and decrease and decrease and increase and decrease. Is that what you want, or
well,
because there will be misses, so it will decrease.
No,
sorry, there will be hits, so it will decrease.
Yeah, but it depends on the stability of these things, right?
So you have a different metric to increase and decrease as well.
Not
the conventional LARC approach to increase and decrease the ghost list. LARC decreases and increases based on specific every axis, right?
Yeah.
If it's a hit, every axis will change the size of that ghost list.
Mm-hmm.
So if you stop it at 9 over 10...
Oh, no. It cannot be. It has to be based on the hit rate. It cannot be... I mean, the decision to whatever or not to increase the size of... It has to be on the hit rate. It cannot be on every hit or every miss.
Well, it can be.
It could,
but
it wouldn't work. I mean, because you could potentially make a mess here, and then when you have a hit, it will decrease too much, and then
Right. It's
not doing anything. So you need to look at the hit rate.
No, all I'm saying is that it can be. I'm just commenting on the use of your can versus cannot.
Oh, yes.
It can be. LARC does it, right?
So the reason I haven't implemented I didn't implement the prototype is because I wasn't sure how to define this, because I think this is a key thing in order to improve, to make this work, to turn off. Because you need to say, like, okay, I improve by a significant amount. And what's a significant amount? Statistically, you could say 5% is a good thing, but you need to...
I think there's a very interesting idea. I would certainly encourage you to move quickly. I don't know if you can make the fast deadline, even if we get good results, because we have hardly any time. But certainly worth pushing for.
Yeah. So I'm going to find out more about this weighted average.
Yeah.
That Professor Jason is, Dr. Jason is talking about.
You can try and find him today and get more out of him. But it's as I see it, it's a simple weighted average of recent versus past.
Yeah.
How much more importance to give to recent information as opposed to older information?
Older information about the page.
Any metric. This applies to any metric. Let's say you're computing a hit rate, and let's call it H, at time t, equal to alpha times H at time t minus 1, plus 1 minus alpha t minus 2.
Is a hit rate at t minus 2? Okay.
Actually, or you can do, 1 minus alpha times. That's one way. I think what Jason was talking about was slightly different, which is whether the current one is a hit or a miss. So if it's a miss, it's 0. If it's a hit, it's 1. Something like that.
Okay.
So that defines how much your hit rate can increase by at any given time.
Okay. So I have
So let's say alpha is 0.9. And then your previous hit rate is 0.5, right? Then 0.9 times 0.5 plus 0.1 times hit or miss. Let's say it's a hit. Okay, then it would be 0.45 plus 0.1, that's 0.55. So your hit rate increased from 0.5 to 0.55 because of the current hit. You can change 0.9 and that will change everything. It makes 0.9 and 0.99. Right, and then this would become 0.99 into 0.5 plus 0.01. Right, so this is 0.495 plus 0.01. So this would be, 495. This is 0.01. This is 505. So from here.
So yeah, if I do this, if I have a way to justifying that this works because of his paper, then I don't need to think of a window and justify it by
the
size.
No, this you can assume it works.
Exactly. So this I can assume it works.
Not that it works, but you can assume that it has been used before and you can find a reference for it and say you're reusing an existing technique.
Yes.
That has worked in other contexts for this context.
Yeah. And they are using this alpha value that's the same that we're using, and that's the way that I want to do it.
No, alpha will need to be configured for specific domains and specific applications.
Oh, so we need to define alpha?
You need to configure alpha. And say that for this set of workloads, this value of alpha seem to do well. I don't know. I think it could be either 0.95 or 99, 98, something like that. Maybe encourage stability, or 0.9. So try a few values and see what you get.
Okay.
But we'll have to sell this whole algorithm a little differently than just as an LRQ, minor change to LRQ.
Well, it's nice.
Think about presentation as well. Because it's an entirely new algorithm which can turn filtering on and off. And now when filtering is on, then we behave a little bit like LRQ, but still differently. Right? So we have to think about how to write this thing so that people are not, they do not get the wrong impression that we are just tweaking LRQ a little bit.
The one thing that...
it's a fundamental change, is what I'm trying to say. And we have to convince the reader that it is.
I think that the biggest change, or the thing that's most significant about this change, is that we bring the concept of stability into the... So they talk about this in a really...
They talk about stability?
They mention it, like, oh, we do this, we increase or decrease the size of the ghost list to encourage stability. When we do a hit or a miss. But it's not a...
spend much time on stability.
But they didn't spend much time on it. So once we talk about... We can make an analysis on stability.
Mm.
And then talk about the algorithm.
Yeah.
And mention them. Like, okay, we have this algorithm that already exists. Well, we propose this thing. And maybe using our arc underneath it has a meaning when you turn it off. Especially, when you turn it off, it's especially better.
Mm.
But maybe even during the regular executions, we can see an improvement. Because already as is, our arc is...
One question. When we filter things off, should we put items directly into T2 instead of putting it in T1? And when we keep it on, should we put items first in T1? That's a different algorithm.
Oh, that's a different algorithm.
Something for you to think about.
What you're saying is this. Okay, so so it's something like you're doing right now. If you hit the ghost list, you put it directly on T2?
Yeah. Well, passes a certain value, yeah, but... even when I'm directly inserting it, yeah, it will go directly into T2, because I'm trying to keep the rule that T2 contains things with the... greater than R, so when R is set to 0...
If you turn filter enough, it should behave just as R.
Yeah.
You put everything directly on T1.
Yeah.
Right.
So
there is no ability for R to put stuff directly in T2. We know that, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So if we put into T2, what do we evict from?
No, but you put directly on T2 when you hit on B1, right?
Oh, okay.
T1,
so you consider that as a
B1
hit?
Yes, if you hit on B1 or B2, you put it on T2. Always. And then you evict from somewhere, depending on the sizes of B.
But this is a different part. Every time ARC adds something into the cache, it adds it into T1.
Yeah.
So how do you put it into T2? Where do you evict from?
If we're talking about filtering?
No.
Or are we talking about when it actually is an ARC?
Yeah, when it is an ARC.
Okay.
So because you said that when you move from ghost list into ARC, into the cache, you put it directly into T2. So how does eviction work? What gets evicted at that time?
Oh, if there's a T1, it gets evicted. If there's no T1, a T2 gets evicted.
It's always T1 that gets evicted?
At first, yeah. because those are seen as lower frequency or not as popular items.
I thought that ARC had a more significant algorithm to figure
out. Oh, if you're talking
stuff.
About ARC,
yeah.
ARC it uses
ARC
P value.
Yeah.
It uses P in order to determine whether or not T1 or T2 would be the best
to
pick
from.
Yeah, to pick from.
Correct. So I guess we should use the same idea there. When we insert into T2, we had to look at the p-value and then figure out what to pick from.
But I mean, when you're doing...
But that's a significant modification to ARC we are talking about here.
So yeah, I mean...
It's an intrusive algorithm.
I mean, if we're adding
a
filter into it...
So
we call it stable ARC.
So if we were to add the filter into it...
Oh,
that would,
I didn't mean to kill you, man. Oh, sorry. That's your... I thought it was mine. This is your...
It's okay. It's Nestor's.
Okay. I didn't say anything. I didn't hear anything.
So,
I mean, for all you know, that was in the mailbox. That's it. And I brought it here.
Well, yeah. If we're going from ARC into filtering something similar to LARC, would we try to make ARC into LARC while we're filtering, and then see if we can convert it back right after? And we go back?
The problem with that is that
I mean,
then you have to say that everything is on T1, right? When you convert it from LARC to ARC.
You could. Or you
so,
could just
so you keep
assume B2, and then, I mean, you can assume everything into T2, and then every time you need to add something, once again, just start populating T1 and take out the least recently used T2 item.
But that's the problem with that, with not starting with ARC in the beginning, is that you don't have the B1 and B2 lists.
I know, you'd probably start with ARC in the beginning. Rather than LARC.
You can put filter on top of ARC. I don't think you need to. We need to stay using an LRU.
Yeah.
An LRU in the beginning.
Yeah.
You can just put ARC there.
I agree. So directly insert into T2. I think that makes more sense. If you're filtering. If you're not filtering, insert into T1.
So what would?
Sorry. If you're not filtering, insert into T1.
So why would I insert directly into T? I mean, if I insert directly into T2, what's going to happen is that T1 doesn't have any.
But you're
value
filtering,
from.
So
no,
technically
no.
It is supposed to go into the T2 of ARC anyways. So you'll have your hit in the ghost that would put it into T2.
You try both. How about that? Try both and see what you get.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe there'll be no difference.
Okay.
Whether you insert into T1 or T2, and then it's better to leave ARC alone as it is without
The thing is, yeah, that inserted directly into T2.
Yeah. So you have a way to prototype these things quickly, right?
But, yeah, but, okay.
Try both.
Okay.
So if it's not in that, basically, an evict is you need to for the ghost list, right?
So you're saying use the ghost list of ARC and insert directly into those ghost lists instead of ever inserting into T1?
Never change the structure of ARC, but be able to treat it like LARC when you needed to for the filtering. So if you were filtering and you completely missed, you want to insert to B1, hit in B1 at that point pretty much means,
what happens?
We're assuming filtering the entire time, pardon.
Yeah, hit in B1 will go into T2,
T2.
Right?
Hit in B2 obviously goes to T2 again. And same thing with the hit in T1 or hit in T2 goes to the
T2.
Most recently spawned T2. In order to get a very LRU behavior out of ARC.
That's interesting.
However, we could also have our evictions. So if we evict from T1, once again, still filtering talk. If we evict from T1, we can put it
into B1 because we know it only has one hit, which is the same thing as us trying to put into B1.
Yeah.
But if we evict from T2, we should probably want to put into B2. It adds a little bit of preference, especially when we are
When R evicts from T2, it goes into B2 anyway, doesn't it?
Yeah, right now.
Yeah.
That's all good. This is still the same, no matter what.
Yeah. Now here the thing is that now you're letting ARC control the size of that ghost list.
Right? Controls B1 and B2. So you have to figure out how, in particular, when you evict something from here in there or you populate it more, how we behave during filtering and when we're not filtering.
Mm-hmm.
So
this is a more intrusive change to ARC. I would like to do both. Why don't you do this one? And Ricardo, you do the non-intrusive ARC modification.
The non-intrusive.
Intrusive ARC.
The non-intrusive.
This is an intrusive modification. Stephen, I'd like you to pursue this. Because
right.
I think this is a very appealing as well. Because what we are saying is that we're looking to fundamentally change the behavior of ARC so that it is aware of stability. And
and
it does filtering.
Yeah. The
so I mean I can see both algorithms being discussed in the same paper and compared against each other.
Okay.
So
yeah, and of course the biggest question is turning and turning off filtering, which I think we want to keep discussing, but as
but
we've talked before,
I think we could use the same. Yeah, that.
We can work with that. We can work with the misrate stability.
Yeah,
great. So I think we're looking for that there, but are we just looking for a point that we're passing for that?
Actually, yeah. So that would be 0.9 or something like that. HT of 0.9, isn't it? No. How do we turn on and turn off filtering?
Oh, well, you turn it off when you see it from
the
upper bound of the ghost list.
Yeah, your ghost list exceeds
ghost list
size.
Is same size, so.
So here, B1 and B2, which are the ghosts, are constant size.
Perhaps you could use the size of B1, B2 for something.
The one thing that I see that it's not. So when you have dark, the ghost list means recently missed pages. And when you have ARC, this means recently evicted pages. So, in the concept of ARC, B1 and B2 is different. I mean, when you change it, you're going to lose all the information. Because, for example, if you change from LARC to ARC, then whatever you have in the ghost list is not what you should have.
Mm. What ARC will have?
Huh?
What LARC has in its ghost list is different than what ARC has in its ghost list.
Yes. So there's got to be an adaption phase, but...
Yeah.
You have to repopulate the
ghost. Possibly, yeah.
Needs more time, yeah. Okay, I think I have someone else to... We have to wrap up. But this is good. This is good. Very, very interesting and useful insight.
Okay, so I'll finish this.
Yeah.